Today's reading is from the book of John, chapter 1, verses 1 to 14. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. This is the word of the Lord.
Christmas, and we're looking at the passage today from John 1, 1 to 14. 20 years in ministry, I've never preached on this passage. I've quoted the passage quite a bit, bits of the passage, but I've never used it as a Christmas passage. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Oh, there we go, in the beginning. So why did Jesus come to us? And this seems like a really kind of a reasonably easy question to ask, and our response should take but a few sentences. Or will it? Maybe we should look at the Bible for some clues about why Jesus had to come to us. Genesis should hold some answers. So we can go through all the Old Testament and look at the bits in between Genesis, but I think Genesis is where it's all about. And the Bible starts at Genesis 1, not at Genesis 3. But the problem is that I think with even in our Christian paradigm, we're so caught up on Genesis 3 that we forget about Genesis 1 and 2. Many folk think that Jesus is all about Genesis 3, just about when sin comes into the world. And that is a big part of it. However, God wanted to continue to have a good relationship with us. And if sin is not forgiven, if we're not sanctified and justified, then what I can honestly say is this. We can't walk and talk with God because we're not holy. So the Adam and Eve story and the snake and all of that's very relevant. It really is. But salvation is actually a call to be restored to original goodness, not to be rescued from original badness. To be restored to original goodness, not to be rescued from original badness. And I know you're thinking like, wait up, Nick. Wait up, Reverend Nick. You know, his death and resurrection is the cure for sin. And it is. And it does bring forgiveness of sin, and it washes us whiter than snow. And we use words like saved, rescued, redeemed. These are Christian phraseologies that we use constantly in our lingo today. But hear me out. You cannot have a relationship with God, God cannot have a relationship with us in our brokenness and sin if we are not holy. And so if all of it was about the forgiveness of sin, oh, you're forgiven of that sin, go ahead. Well, that's the same as the sacrificial system in the Old Testament. See, even in the Old Testament, we see different folk coming to God time and time again and seeking to be forgiven. There's actually laws about what you have to sacrifice to be forgiven. And sometimes God talks to them, sometimes he doesn't, sends out angels to guard and protect them. But then there's the challenge of them having a relationship with them. And we don't see, like even Moses had to go up on a mountain, cover his face and everything else just to talk to God. If all we were was to be rescued from Genesis 3 and the brokenness of sin coming into the world, then the problem we face is it still leaves us high and dry as we have sin and brokenness still living in us. So if it's just about forgiveness, then it's not enough. Being a Christian does not inoculate us against sinning or against bad things happening to us and so much more. And so Jesus comes in and he renovates and restores. He comes to earth as God wrapped in human flesh to give us a taste of heaven here on earth. And when he heals, it's like heaven with no sickness and no brokenness anymore. When he forgives sin, it's like heaven. We're fully forgiven. But there has to be an ongoing forgiveness there too. I'll come back to that. When he restores people's dignity, it's like heaven. It's like they're filled with dignity again. And he's taken away all their shame. When he deals with their torments, oh, it's like heaven, where all their anxieties and fears and depressions are gone. When he comes and meets them where they're at, and the lowest point of wherever their life is at, it's like heaven, reaching down. God putting his arms around us and his peace just falling onto us. When Jesus stops people trying to control what God can and can't do, it's like heaven. Because no one can tell God what to do. Because God is God. Do you know, when Jesus did all these miracles in the scriptures, there's almost no repeated methodology so that no one can say, this is the formula for God's healing and restoration. I'll take this tablet. That's going to solve all your sin problems. Take this tablet. That just heals everything. No, there's no formula. Pray this way. Stand in that position. Put your right hand on your hip and your left hand in the air. I don't know. You look like a teapot. But there's no set formula. And do you know why? Because we're dealing with God, and God's dealing with each one of us who is unique. Each one of us is his unique masterpiece of creation. Masterpiece. That's what it says in the scriptures. You are God's masterpiece. Sometimes he lays, when Jesus is healing, sometimes he lays hands on people. Sometimes he speaks a word of truth to them. Sometimes he commands the uncleanliness to come out. Sometimes he spits and makes mud, or people touch his cloak. He prays for them. He sometimes goes and gets the disciples to do it. Often. We see him sending them out, the 12, and sending out the 72. Oh, and does it get any better than that? Sometimes Jesus says, whoa, I don't need to come do this. When you get home, your servant's healed. When you get home, your child's going to be raised from the dead. There's no formula. There's no formula apart from a contrite heart that comes to God and says, God, I need you. I need you because either I'm sick or one of my friends, one of my family's sick, and I really care about them. God says, yeah, I can tell. God's all about a personal relationship. All about a personal... What did he say when he came walking through the garden? Where are you? Adam, Eve, where are you? Where are you? Oh, we were hiding. Why? Where's our personal relationship? We're afraid. If God just wanted a formula relationship, then that would be easy. But he actually wants an individual relationship with everyone. And the problem is he made us all to be unique. As I said, a masterpiece, a one of a kind. And he comes to us. See, even in the garden, when Adam and Eve had eaten of the fruit, he came to them. In John 1:14, it says, the word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. This is Jesus it's talking about. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. You know what, brothers and sisters? He came to call us to be restored to original goodness and just not rescued from original badness. I love it, to be restored to original goodness. The religious of the day, well, some loved him and some followed him, and others plotted his demise. No one likes to lose power and authority, and many of the religious leaders saw that Jesus challenged just that. Their power, their authority was all because why? Because as he spoke of how God wanted to be back in Genesis 1 again, walking and talking with us, they realized that their role was going to be defunct. Huh. So Jesus tried to actually work with the Pharisees and the Sadducees, the priests, and he preached and taught and performed miracles in their synagogues, it says. He went into their synagogues. He didn't go, hold on, I'm going to go set up shop down the road. He still did the miracles out in the wilderness, yeah. But he didn't go and say, I'm setting up shop down the road. He tried to work with all people, even the religious. Sadly, some of them thought they controlled God and his works and knew who was in heaven and who was out of heaven and who could be healed and who couldn't be and what day people could be healed on. You know, Jesus got chastised and yelled at by people in the scriptures for healing on the Sabbath, God's holy day. Oh, you're doing work on the Lord's day. And Jesus, what did he do? He spoke directly to them to repent and stop it. Just stop. See, we were created to be in relationship. We're created to be in relationship with God, with each other. No arguments, no fractures, no disagreements. All working together to bless and grow together in community. There's this Latin word called communitas. And the Latin word actually is meaning to grow together in the common good for all that is around us. To grow in the common good for all that is around us together. You know, that's the beauty of I think, Christianity. So are we restored to goodness. When God created, he looked at it and he says, it is good. First day, Yestiana, it is good. Second day, it is good. Third day, it is good. Fourth, it is good. The goodness was there. We were walking and talking in the garden with him, and there was nothing impeding our relationship. Before Genesis 3, nothing impeded the relationship. And then in Genesis 3, we see sin and brokenness coming in, and all seems lost. All seems lost? No, God started plotting a plan to restore us. And you know, yeah, I can look at the Old Testament sometimes and think, well, there's all these different rules and laws and everything else and all these different ways, and God was just trying to get people to come back to him. But finally along comes Jesus, the cure for sin and brokenness, and he gives two gifts at Christmas. Two gifts. Okay, when Jesus dies, the first thing he gives us is justification, that huge word. Justification, just as if I'd justified. Just as if I'd never sinned. So we can have a right relationship with God. So we can, it's a beautiful place to be. That's when our sins are forgiven and we're made holy. But then the next day we get up and we do it again. So then the second word comes in, sanctification, sanctified. Now it doesn't work the same. And it's like having a shower each morning that washes off the sin and grime of yesterday. So every day, when we get up, we're sanctified. God washes us clean, washes us fresh and anew. So Jesus comes in the world and he says, you know, as I said, he gives us a taste of heaven here on earth and hits the reset button in a relationship for us all with God so that we can walk and talk with him again. We no longer have to go through the sacrificial system with the priests before we come to God. You know, God has never not been interested in us. He's always wanted to be in relationship with his precious creation, always wanted to be in relationship with us. So this Christmas, my question is, what are you going to do with Jesus? You can leave him as a baby in a manger, sing a few little lullabies to him, look at his life and works and think, gosh, what a good man. Or do as the shepherds and the magi of the priests of other faith did. The shepherds, the rejected of Israel, because they were permanently unclean from slaughtering sheep and the like. Their laws made them unclean. Magi? People who followed the stars, the seers? What did they do? They recognized the king who came to us, the Prince of Peace himself, and they worshipped him. Maybe this is a Christmas you start worshipping Jesus again. Have a blessed day.